man Kathy Dawes now, along with Riley County Police Captain Josh Kyle, and just all sorts of things we can get into. We did mention when we briefly discussed one of the questions that kids are even asking is about racism, and that's part of our world today. I know your last law board meeting, it was quite a discussion. I think the meeting went, I heard, close to 3 hours. I wasn't able to be there. I was at the Kansas Association of Broadcasters Convention. Brady Bowman was nice enough to fill in for me and wrote a very detailed article, which you can still access on our website, newsradiokman.com. But I know that there had been talk about maybe a group getting together and exploring this a little bit more, Josh, and maybe just some of the highlights of where you stand at this point.
Well, yeah, it's a serious issue, and it's one that's going to be with us as long as policing is around and as long as we talk about democracy. And I thought there were some great moments during the law board meeting. First off, Detective Johnson, who we've mentioned multiple times already, got up, and I think he did a great job of opening up the conversation from the very beginning. We exist in a democracy, and part of a democracy and an important part of it is the ability of people to get up and ask very hard questions of the government. And I think that's something that, at least personally, when I see it happen, I'm watching democracy happen. And I think that's a good thing. So keep asking very difficult questions of your government. And we know that law enforcement, especially because we went with a localized system in the United States, the most visible and accessible form of government on a day-to-day basis is the police department. And we also have the duty of protecting people's civil rights, their constitutional rights. So it makes perfect sense that all of these different issues within democracy congregate and intersect within law enforcement. But one of the things I think it's important to bring out, two things to talk about. First off is the issue of fair and impartial policing, because that's the goal. We want a police department that's fair, and we want a police department that's impartial as it goes about its day-to-day business. And we know that bias exists, and when we talk about racism, that's explicit bias. Racism occurs when people are perfectly aware of, and make decisions and go about their business perfectly aware of these biases. But there's something actually that we've been trained to watch out for, and that is implicit bias. Those are biases that we're not even aware of. They exist inside of us, and we're not even aware that they're occurring. And they can creep their way into the decisions we make because we're not even aware of them. And this, of course, is Dr. Lori Friedle's area of expertise. She's come in and provided training to the police department, and her staff have come in and provide specific supervisor training to the supervisors at our agency. And we know training is one part of what she calls a comprehensive program for fair and impartial policing, and it actually involves multiple elements. Oftentimes, we talk about training. It's a very important part, but it's also important to take a look at your policies, and we did that as well, that makes certain that bias is not creeping its way into your policies, or that your policies are very clear on what's expected of officers as they make day-to-day decisions. Another important part of a comprehensive plan for fair and impartial policing is recruiting, hiring, and promotion. One of the significant changes we made is that when we're doing a background investigation on people, we ask, what kind of biases do you have? And we check for the reaction. And some, you can tell, have kind of been taught or feel as though, well, I don't have any biases. Well, we know that's not true. It's okay to have biases. It's important that you're aware of them and not use them in your decision making. So let's talk about that. And then also part of the background investigation is to ask people in their history, what kind of biases does this person have? And as a result of this training and as a result of changing our policies and practices, we've actually had some applicants that otherwise we may not have realized that have expressed some strong biases in their pasts, some that we have concerns about. And it appears that they have some form of explicit biases that they're aware of and continue on with and could impact their decision-making as if they entered in the law enforcement field. So I think that's been a very positive change. We talked about community outreach already. And not only is that important for community policing and for problem solving, but it's also important to be as a fair and impartial police department to have outreach. In fact, one of the things that came up at the meeting was we're having a conversation on race reconciliation, a community perspective at St. Thomas More this Monday at 7 o'clock. And a number of us plan on being there at the police department to be a participate or at least listen in on this conversation. So I think that's an important element is how are we reaching out to community. But what really focused on the last law board meeting was the issue of measurements. And wow, what a big subject that is. Measurements, essentially what measurements means is measuring your car stops or measuring in some way your arrest practices or some form of enforcement. You measure the results of it. It is the most controversial and it's the most difficult part of any fair and impartial policing program that you have. And I actually sat down and dove into this subject, and Dr. Lori Friedle has written a book on the subject, and it's about 464 pages long, some of the densest material I've been through, and I ended up writing some recommendations as a result, and it was really interesting to see in this last law board meeting, now it looks like we may be heading at least in some form of that direction. And that, I think that's what the task of this committee has been given, is to take a look at specifically marijuana arrests and ask the questions, are there signs of bias when it comes to marijuana arrests? We know there's a disparity. We know that there's a, when you take a look at a population and you take a look at our arrests, there's a disparity between our population and the arrests we make, but disparity does not necessarily equal bias. And a number of human factors can come into play in why you would see these disparities. So I think that's the task that's in front of this group, and that's why it's forming, is to ask the question, let's take a look at our in-house data at first, and maybe there alone, and ask the question, what, are there any signs of enforcement bias as it pertains to marijuana arrests?
It's interesting. Of course, obviously at the national level, the spotlight has been on police and law mm-hmm. enforcement in so many different ways. And knock on wood, luckily, nothing really violent occurring here. But, I mean, that's always, you're always nervous a little bit about that. And, of course, with recent occurrences on campus, that's right at, you know, our back door. That's part of Manhattan. And I don't know what the answer really is, but we, for a long time, I guess, probably thought we were great here in Manhattan. We didn't have the issues maybe that we were seeing at the national level, but maybe we do need to take a harder look at what we're doing here locally. I don't know.
Well, I think the issue of bias, because we know it exists, we know that we all as human beings have different biases, and because law enforcement is visible and law enforcement is accessible as a government institution, and also because we're responsible for enforcing law in a fair and impartial manner, I think that issue will always be there. It's always been there, and it's always going to be there. And I think it's one that we need to dive into, take seriously, and ask hard questions.
And as you say, awareness, I think, is key. Now, you said something interesting, too, about democracy in action. Mm-hmm. And I will share with you, I helped out a little bit with the legislative forum that the City Commission had earlier this week about mental health. And Colonel Melton from Fort Riley Irwin Army Hospital stopped me in the hall afterwards, and he was just so impressed. He said, this was democracy in action. Mm-hmm. The give and take with some of the community stakeholders, the city commissioners, the state legislators, the back and forth of trying to figure out an answer. And I think it really, democracy in action there again on this particular subject too. Wanted to get into mental health. We'll see. It looks like we might have a phone call. We'll see if that's for us. But I know that you used to be very involved when it came to mental health issues and some of the different things that were going on that way. Let's go ahead and take the call though. Welcome to In Focus with Captain Josh Kyle, Riley County Police Department. Go ahead, please.
Yes, as well as looking after the treatment of the public, I was interested in the treatment of the officers and their wives, that they know that they're having a safe day. You know, we lost another Ford Explorer over in Topeka this week, and nobody knows why. All of a sudden, there's just an inappropriate decision with the vehicle and a wreck and a situation that you would never think had happened. I'm concerned about that carbon monoxide leaking into the cab. You know, Ford won't recall them. And I've got this carbon monoxide detector that I was wanting to get to your police benevolent president so he could check your vehicles, because we don't need to lose any over here. Thank you for all your interest.
As he got to talking more, I think I do vaguely remember, is he talking about a case involving an officer with carbon monoxide?
I'm not aware of the specific incident. I have heard over time that there are some concerns, you know, with any vehicle. I don't know a lot about the specifics, but there are some concerns with some police models that they might be leaking carbon monoxide due to different reasons. You know, police vehicles undergo a tremendous amount of stress when they're on the road. They're constantly being used, and we hot seat our vehicles, and so they're constantly in a state of going from one place to another. Plus, we put demands on them that most people don't put demands on their vehicles. And in order to be profitable, in order to be able to produce a vehicle, it has to be popular on the civilian market. Now, they do some different things to them for police packages, but ultimately, you've got a civilian vehicle that's been tacked onto with some additional equipment for policing, both inside and outside the vehicle. These are concerns that we have, but I haven't seen any indication in-house. I remember when I was an officer And this has been a number of years ago. We had these little stickers that we put on our cars, and it was a little thing. It turned, changed colors, and it was a warning that carbon monoxide. And I remember as a very young officer in the 90s, we had one of the officers that went to the academy with me, and her training officer apparently had some incident in a car. And so we're aware this happens from time to time, but I haven't seen it become a widespread problem.
Let's go ahead and take that break. It is almost 9:30, and again, we have Captain Josh Kyle, Riley County Police Captain. We might talk a bit about mental health, although I know your focus now is a little bit different responsibilities than it was a few years ago when I chatted with you about this. We can talk about all sorts of other things and take phone calls. One more segment with Captain Josh Kyle today.